Essay 19. There they were, dignified, invisible, moving without pressure, over the dead leaves, in the autumn heat, through the vibrant air. These are some lines from the opening of T.S. Eliot's Burnt Norton, the first of his famous four quartets, the poem I mentioned in Essay 7. I have always had an ambivalent relationship with these late poems of Eliot, so austere, so moving, yet what? Something both too much and too little about them. So high on solemnity, so low on, well, life, haunted, past and future collapsing into a present that doesn't go anywhere, no legs to walk on. Right now, I cannot afford either of those luxuries. Too high on solemnity, too low on life. I thought of these lines today as I headed up the first hill, all those trees just standing there, stripped bare now, straight up, stiff, like thick oars stuck in still waters, no hands to drive them. Or tall spars carving up the sky, a growing chorus singing, praying, almost inaudibly, under breath, to themselves at first, then separately to one another, whispers out of cadence. I overhear as I enter their domain until all together in unison, louder. Winter, we wait. They are arrayed all the way up the hill as far as I can see, armadas of them, thousands, tens of thousands, maybe millions. Every shade of gray between white and black, blending in the distance to a tall wall of taupe. No leaves now to dress out their taut frames, all of them saying, one great wave, winter, we wait. I am so grateful to them, my great friends. Not much left to do or say now, they know, as I stride past them, or stop to bide my time with them. Patient, willing to stay, stand by, knowing nothing can make it go away. They already know what I am trying to learn here with them. They teach me patiently. So loving, gentle, with me day after day, not afraid of anything, even me. For the first mile or so, I cried. Intermittently, sometimes convulsively, seized up bodily, not by pain, but by the idea of pain, so great it takes over, shakes you, until all the tears fall down. Those letters scatter now viscerally on the page, so silly seeming. But that's how they walked up there, explaining exactly how to arrange what they had to say. So I let them say that way what they said. I took a scattered, switchback kind of walk today, willy-nilly, no plan. At one point, I realized I had doubled back on myself, the little bridge I had crossed about 10 minutes before, now right down there again on my left. I did not want to turn back, retrace the path. I hate turning back. And I did not want to keep going forward over that bridge where I came from. Just another form of turning back. So I headed up a steep bank through the brush, certain I would cross a familiar path sooner or later. I passed a group of great tall trees, about as big as trees get in these woods, trees that have waited forever, year after year after year, 100 or more years, way more than I can even imagine. Their bark, which I stopped to feel, thick as elephant skin, rough textured like huge brown syrup drops frozen in layered cascades down their sides. They said quietly, with the slight smiles of those who know down to the bones, that there is no way now to fight or flee. Winter, wait. This is not negotiable. The survivors, these great trees, know this reality. I'm listening to them today, as I do every day, and I pay attention. reality. That's exactly why Burnt Norton came into my head months ago and keeps speaking up over and over, saying exactly for me to anyone willing to listen long enough what I want them to know for their own sake. Go, 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 said the bird. Humankind cannot bear very much reality. Finally, I struggled up a very steep, mulchy bank, no traction, which crested on the wide, open path Carol and I almost always finished our walk on. We never said so, but I think we both gravitated to this path because it was wide enough for us to walk together, side by side, instead of single file in an awkward rhythm, each of us trying to decide not which one of us would lead, but which position was the best to protect and defend the other, up front, warding off the future, or down back, warding off the past. We loved each other in just that way, every day, for as long as we could, walking together, side by side, on the wide path when we could find it. Between everything and nothing, a line always gets drawn. Sometimes it's a hard one, not negotiable, no turning back, life and death. Sometimes softer, a little give and take. I have been floating through the liminal space my line occupies for months now, falling, always falling, but going nowhere. In and out of myself, this world, time, watching and wondering at it, whatever it is. I may never get to leave this space, but I know this fall is almost over. Toward the end of my walk, I thought again of Emily Dickinson. How happy I am to have finally come to know her. In my mind, I went to visit her at that great house in Amherst, my good friend. We chatted casually at the door. Then she took me to the drawing room, where we sat side by side in large, soft chairs, angled askance so we could glance at one another without the affront of continuous full face forward. Just far enough apart to keep from intruding too much on the other's separateness. We sipped tea and talked intermittently, in brief bursts, intense, punctuated with laughter, ranging from deep guffaws to the slight breath that escapes from a wry, knowing smile. She knew already that I was nobody too, so she didn't have to ask. She and I sat and smiled in our nobodiness. That vast universe where life and death meet routinely, where all the flies buzz, the carriage stops, the slant of winter afternoon light that waits the day with cathedral tunes. This is a place where everybody who is somebody, all those frogs in the bog advertising, stays away from, mostly because they don't know exactly where it's at. If they only knew how beautiful she was. I was. Carol was. This fall. Everybody would want to be a nobody. Or at least walk with one, talk with one, laugh with one, cry with one. Just a few minutes, every few days, is all it would take to change lives. Theirs, mine, hers. So easy. I can't believe how easy. Neither can she. I'm laughing now. The trees are laughing now. Carol and Emily are laughing now. They know what I know. Yesterday afternoon, I wrote two poems. I've not written a poem in many years, at least 15, maybe more, for reasons I explain in rereading poets and will not go into here. Suffice it to say, I stopped so that I could become a poet I loved instead of a man I can't stand who writes poems. I was on my way to the Carnegie Library today for the cappuccino and crumb cake I sometimes reward myself with before I teach. As I stepped on the first stone step on the way up, a man about my age was sweeping up some of the dead leaves cornered between step and wall. I froze, one foot on the bottom step, the other poised to reach the next, and watched him, so kindly, so patient, catching one leaf at a time on the broom tip, as if he cared for each one, loved it. Time came to a stop. For a second, or two, or a week. The lines to this poem came to me and told me to write them exactly as they appear here. So I did. He sweeps each leaf from the step. I step on each leaf. Dustpan handle angled up to hand. A man sweeps each leaf like me. Each step. As you might guess, we are reading the language poets this week in class, a good antidote to Eliot. Later that day, after class, in my office, trying to gather myself for the ride home, that hard transition from the social animation of the classroom to the reality of being alone for the whole weekend, stiffening myself, I looked out the window. In the safety netting, a floor below, I saw a bird's wing, just the wing, white, stuck in the netting, disembodied, literally unable to fly anywhere, which wanted me to say what it had to say this way. Dingy wing flipping, white, back and forth, stuck in netting, stretched to catch all the falling white wings from falling, all the way down on me, down there, about to walk by. This wings fall all over. Today I simply wrote down what I was asked to write. I call them poems, but they could as well be phone calls. They are not even mine. They are theirs. The sound of one wing flapping, the sound of one man sweeping. Someone asked me recently what a poem is, how it's different from other kinds of text genres. If you read the language poets, you know that question has no easy answer. I really have no answer, I said, what a poem is any longer. It's like all things in life. Somewhere between everything and nothing, we decide to draw a line. Poems draw lines. That's a good place to start and end. The end of my work, this writing, my book, clip-clopping now up to the curb to let me off, I can feel a fall, awful. For a month, it was everywhere, all over. Now it's done, all over. Eliot says it. Words move, music moves, only in time. But that which is only living can only die. Words, after speech, reach into silence. Words strain, crack, and sometimes break under the burden, under the tension, slip, slide, perish, will not stay. Love is itself unmoving, only the cause and end of movement, timeless and undesiring, except in the aspect of time, caught in the form of limitation between unbeing and being. Sudden, in a shaft of sunlight, even while the dust moves, there rises the hidden laughter of children in the foliage. Quick now, here, now, always. Ridiculous, the waste sad time, stretching before and after.